Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. I was only making pasta the other day and it dawned on me I was getting boiling water straight from my kitchen tap to make it. Unbelievable. I've become so used to it, actually. It just didn't occur to me. I was like, wow, I've got boiling hot water straight from my tap. It is a great gadget. If you can afford it, I would definitely recommend one. Great product and a great company too. For more details and to look at the styles available, I really like the black one, by the way. I've got like a brushed silver, stainless steel, whatever you call it, but the black one looks very, very cool. Anyway, go to cooker.co.uk to look at it. That's Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. On today's hour, I'm curious about what it's like to be a professional dancer on Strictly, and joining me to talk about this is Katja Jones. Katja has been partnered with Ed Balls. They did the Gangnam Style dance. She was also partnered with Mike Bushell, Adam Peaty. She was the first same-sex dancer with Nicola Adams, and she was partnered with Joe McFadden, and they only went and won it. Let's meet her. Here's Katja. Katja, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you? Are you well?
I am very well. I'm really excited. I've listened to your podcasts.
Thank you.
A podcast, by the way. So insightful. So I'm hoping this is not going to be a letdown.
Oh, I hope. I don't think so, because I've met you briefly on occasion, and you know your way around a conversation. So, I think the way to start this is we're at the point now where you're about to go and start the show again. So it's gearing up. What sort of excitement is there for you knowing that it's about to happen again for you? Because it must be that period when Strictly's on must change your life completely, does it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, yeah, obviously we're talking about Strictly Come Dancing, the show. It's going to be my seventh year this year. I think the question that I get asked a lot is, are you still enjoying it?
Yeah.
You know, because it seems like very repetitive, you know, comes to it. We get a celebrity, can't dance, we teach them, we go out. It seems like a very repetitive thing to do, but it really isn't. And I think what I get the most excited about is learning who my dance partner is,
right,
and what can I do with them. Because you've got to be flexible. It's like a chameleon. You've got to find ways to approach them, you know, to get the best out of them. And each person is different. You know, I used to be very much of a, it's my way or highway, you know. When I first came from Russia and started dancing with Neil for England, I felt like I was very Russian in that sense. But as years gone on, it just in general got older, I'm learning that everyone is different. You know, I can't expect people to behave the way I behave because we're all different. So, and this experience is a perfect example of that. You get a different person every single year, and that's what's exciting. How can I change and adjust and get the best out of them and teach them how to dance? Everybody learns differently as well. And seeing them going from zero to performing these amazing routines every single week, that's what's exciting.
Yeah.
And I think that's what gets the audience going as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's anticipation.
Definitely. Did you say you danced for England?
Yeah, I represented Great Britain.
Did you?
I'm a 9-time British national champion.
How does that work then? Can you just...
So one part of the partnership
has to be British,
yeah. Or so in ballroom world, it's a very, very normal to have mixed partnerships.
When you say mixed, you mean from different nationalities?
From different nationalities, yeah.
Right.
You will see it in a top level that pretty much every single couple is mixed, different countries. Majority girls are probably Eastern European.
Right.
So on the top level of ballroom dancing, you're kind of looking for partners all around the world just to find your perfect match that's going to create the most successful partnership. So I wasn't really known or, you know, didn't have great results when I started dancing with Neil. But our teacher, we had the same teacher, saw potential that two of us could work really well together. And obviously Neil was British and we started dancing together and we started representing Great Britain. And very quickly our career just went boom, escalated like crazy. We became 9-time British national champion, 3-time world champion representing Great Britain. I was actually always at the nationals the only one that knew the words to God Save the Queen.
God Save the Queen, which now obviously changed to God Save the King.
Yes.
Right, so look, I know nothing. We'll come back to Strictly.
Yes, okay.
Because Strictly is exciting, but you've opened a whole world to me that I have no knowledge of
at all.
Okay, so when you do ballroom dancing, mm-hmm. I assumed that it's huge in Russia and Asia mm-hmm. and South America maybe, and then it's not quite as big over here, but apart from the TV show. Am I right with that?
You are kind of wrong. Because, as you know, Blackpool is a mecca of ballroom dancing. And when I was little, growing up, the dream was to make it to Blackpool, to go to England, to have lessons with the best teachers in the world. And the best coaches in the world were here in England. In fact, it wasn't prime. So this is quite funny. The first few places as a ballroom dancer you visit in England is Croydon, Norbury in Blackpool. So it's not the best impression of this country. But we used to go with our eyes wide open, go, wow, this is incredible. So yeah, for every single kid that danced, well, back then in Russia, I was like, right, my dream is to go and have lessons with the best British coaches and dance in Blackpool and visit England. Like, so in fact, I had this top that I sort of manifested this actually, where with rhinestones on the back of it, I written London, and I had like the England badge on the front of it that I've all added myself, because that was the dream. And then who knew that years later, I would actually be representing this country, become a citizen of this country and perform on the biggest show, you know.
But when you represent the country, do you feel like you're representing our country?
Actually, there's a funny story. I remember the first year me and Neil danced in Blackpool, which is the biggest championship. So it's like Wimbledon, right, for tennis. Let's compare to that. It's not world championships, right? But prestige-wise, it is the biggest. To win Blackpool means absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So the first year we danced in it, we made it to the final. And unexpectedly, we stood there on the side. So what happens is couples stand on the side, and you get called onto a floor if you made it, right? So we stand there and they go, couple one, representing Great Britain, couple 110. We just stood there going, who else is from Britain? We're like, we don't know. And then all our friends just pushing us onto the floor. It's you guys, it's you, you made it. Couldn't believe it. And then halfway through, sort of they present each couple from each country and they take a bow and they go, from Russia. And I went forward and Neil's like, what are you doing? Because I was so used to representing Russia. I was like, oh no, what am I doing? So it took time, but no, definitely I was so welcomed. And I felt, like I said, I always sang the Queen. I felt so honored to represent this country.
Okay, there's so much to unpack here, because already I don't understand the format of the dance. Is it like Greece? Have you got numbers on you? Are people tapping you on the shoulder going, your time's up? What actually, how does the format actually work? Why are you on the sideline being called? What is going on?
Right. So, for example, in Blackpool, you've got hundreds of couples entering the competition, which are then split into heats. So we would have like 25 heats, maybe 20 couples at the same time dancing the same dance. So it's chaos. 20 couples doing the cha-cha-cha.
What, all on the dance?
All on dance at the same time to the same tune. And you have, I think, about 11 adjudicators all around the floor with their pads. And if they like you, if they want you to go through, they tick, they cross your number, okay, right? Literally, the song is about a minute and a half, so they have about 3 seconds per couple to make a judgment and to put you forward or not. It's very quickly, they literally look across the floor with their pad, boom, 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 tick, 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 tick. Then all the results go back, get calculated, and then for the next round, you stand on a side and your number either get called or not, or you go home. And it goes round after round after round after round. In each round, there's 5 dances in Latin and ballroom. I used to do primarily Latin. And so you go on and on and on. About 6 rounds maybe in Blackpool until you make it to the final. Okay. And then in final, there's 6 couples. Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, you get placed.
So it's all done on... Do they generally get it right when they do that?
As you can imagine, it's quite subjective.
Yeah.
Because you might like their style, you might not. You might like their dress, you might not. You might like their technique, you might not. But you've only seen 3 seconds of it. So,
yeah,
you know.
Do you know what? I don't know anything about dancing, but to do my research for this, I looked you up and watched you dancing with Neil on YouTube. And oh my God, I don't like swearing, but fuck me, you're brilliant, you two. I mean, Neil is amazing, isn't he? And
he
I mean, you are obviously. And Neil, the two of you, just the speed you're going around the dance floor. Mm. And what I love about it is the control of your bodies. I've always think that whenever I watch gymnasts or anything like that, I always think, God, they've got amazing control over their bodies. The speed you two are moving around, and it's just it's wonderful. How long does it take to get from thinking up a dance and the choreography to that final thing? How many weeks of rehearsals? Sorry,
weeks.
Practice training.
You mean years?
Yeah, but surely once you choose a dance, then it's a matter.
Oh no, we practice all of them constantly.
Right,
right, because we compete in all 5 dances. It doesn't go dance by dance. So you're just constantly refining your craft. We would be doing basics, which is literally walking. Rumba walk is the essential, which is genuinely just walking. I'll just stand up and show you what it is.
Okay.
Right?
All
you
right.
Can All we would do every day is this, just walk.
Catches walking sort of with a hip sway.
Yeah, that's all we would do. So every day we'd come into the rehearsal room for hours, just do that walking.
Yeah.
To refine the technique, the coordination of our arms towards our feet, the core, the spine. Like, if you can nail that, which you can never perfect, you can just get better at.
Yeah.
Then, you know, everything else will hopefully fall into place. But then there is a style, there's a character, charisma, the choreography. So it's an ongoing thing. That's why I always say practice makes progress, does makes perfect.
Mm.
And that's why I always remind my students as well, you know, on Strictly as well.
Yeah. Practice, all right, let's go back to the beginning with you then. So you were born in, when you grew up in Russia,
mm-hmm.
and your mum's Korean, is
that's
that right?
That's right.
That's Russian. Is there any Korean influences in your life at all, do you think?
Food! So
kimchi.
Oh my God, don't even start. Yeah, so a lot of people, by looking at me, kind of can't, nobody can ever figure out where I'm from, plus my accent is all messed up, you know. So my mom is Korean, born in Kazakhstan, which was Soviet Union, right? There's a lot of Korean people in Kazakhstan because Stalin shifted them over from Korea. History lesson, you can look it up. So there's a lot of Korean people in Kazakhstan. She was born there and moved to St. Petersburg to study in university. Met my dad there. My dad is Russian with Lithuanian, actually, family background. Yeah, and it's me and my brother, so we're Eurasian, as we like to call ourselves.
Right.
But as I was born in Russia and brought up, I consider myself, I think, culturally more Russian than Korean. However, yes, things like food that my mum, we always have rice in our house. There's always a rice cooker. Every single day, 24/7, rice is available in our house. Kimchi, homemade, yes, all the time. Some other Korean dishes and also Kazakh dishes because, you know, they've been influenced by it as well. My mom hasn't even been to Korea herself, so she doesn't really speak
the
language.
Have you been there?
I've been there when competing a couple of times and I loved it, felt like home.
Isn't it huge over there?
Dancing,
yeah.
Dancing is huge in Asia.
Yeah.
Massive, massive. Hong Kong, China. We used to travel all around China competing. Very interesting.
So isn't there cash for you to be made over there now? Now you're sort of a celeb in Britain.
We used to. So when we were at the top of our game, world champions, we were obviously in high demand because the way Chinese look at it, if we can get the best people in the world to teach us, you know, we learn the most. So we used to practically live there. You know, you would go to this massive dance academies with 2,000 students in the room trying to teach them, who often didn't speak any English, so it's all very visual, and you're forced to sort of pick up a few words here and there. But yes, it's massive, they love it. And what I found very actually interesting is Neil being very, you know, pale skinned and ginger, they saw him as like a celebrity. We would just go into a local shop and people would stop and stare at him and take selfies with him where I was passed as a local.
Yeah, I went to Vietnam once, and I was, when I had hair, I was really blonde. And I remember people just coming up and talking to me and coming to like touch my hair.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Mm-hmm. It was like, and I felt very tall around a lot of the people.
Yeah. Really, do you know what's really funny? So, because obviously we were, like I said, you know, top of our game. Chinese couples learn by copying a lot. Mm-hmm. So they would copy the routines and the moves. And in China, that actually the boys would dye their hair ginger and they would call themselves Neil and Katya and do our dances.
Brilliant.
I love it. It's amazing. Yeah.
And so are there lots of mixed race kids then where you grew up in St. Petersburg?
Yes, I guess, because Russia is so vast.
It's huge.
So, and, you know, historically, there's a lot of Asian blood within us. So, yeah, you will see a lot of sort of mix.
So when you grew up then, how much, by the way, can I ask you just not to bang the tabletop?
Oh, no,
you're very physical. You're very expressive with your hands, but the listeners will start going, why is that banging? It's Katya going, dum, 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 explaining things. So what age did you get into dance? Was it something you did very early?
So my life, and I feel like a lot of Russian kids' life, is doing lots of after-school activities. I did gymnastics, piano, languages, painting, singing, dancing. Ballroom dancing is very popular. Mm-hmm. It's almost part of curriculum. You'd find lots of children going after school doing ballroom dancing. So I started at the age of 6, but I did all of it. And then slowly other things just fell off because I couldn't handle the pain of gymnastics, stretching. I'm rubbish at singing. I still play piano even now, up until now. So piano and dancing kind of were the last two. And my piano teacher said to me, she said, Katya, either commit yourself or just focus on one thing. And I made a decision, okay, I'm going to leave that behind and focus on dancing, because it seemed like it was a very organic thing. I never thought, right, I'm going to be a dancer. This is my dream. Never. I just kept going with the flow because I enjoyed it so much. And my mum loved it. She would make me costumes and teachers were very encouraging. And I suddenly kept getting better partners because people saw something in me. It was a very natural sort of journey. And then before I knew it, yeah, my mum started taking me to the city because we lived outside and still do, the big city. She would drive me every day for lessons, group classes. And I just kept, you know, I just loved it, but I never thought about it as in this is going to be my destiny. Never. I just kept going, kept doing it. People, you know, often say, oh, there was a moment, the click moment where I thought this is it. I never had that.
Didn't you? How much of it is being natural and how much is training? Because I, you know, obviously I assume that there's an element in the fact that you're like any sport, mm-hmm. you've got to have some talent.
Yeah, you know, they say talent is nothing without hard work, and it's very true. And I've witnessed a lot of talented people like ruin their careers, even in dance, just because they couldn't commit or they were not mentally there or not enough discipline in them. So I think, not to blow my own trumpet, but the reason why I've succeeded at dancing is because there was a balance of talent and hard work and dedication and perfectionism and charisma as well, you know, which you can say, you know, you're born with or not.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny, because I think if you were to ask anyone right now, people would say that I'm such a big extrovert, you know, extrovert, very loud and expressive. But if you ask my mum, she'd tell you that I'm an introvert.
Right.
And as a teenager, I did not talk to her. We would be driving in a car for hours. I never wanted to share my emotions, my experiences. I was very shy. Never, like, I remember as a teenager, my dad was like, why do you do this duck face? I just get really tight in the face when I danced. Never smiled, had zero confidence. My mum was my confidence, pretty much. She'd be like, you are the best, you go do it. And I'm like, no, mum, I'm never had belief in myself. So it's something that I had to embrace and learn and sort of own almost, mm-hmm. you know, that no, you are good. Just go out there with confidence. But yeah, it's interesting because it doesn't come across like it at all now. So it was a big journey, but I just enjoyed it and wanted to always do better and better.
I think I can't imagine that, but I was quite shy as a kid and people go, what you know, because
right?
But I think what happens is when you find your way, you know, you get through your teenage years and you suddenly find your way and you go into an adult and you find what you're good at, mm-hmm. you can start expressing yourself. So, you know, when I'm on TV, I'm all right. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable. And then, you know, if you put me in front of a room of people and stand up and do a sort of like a chat, I'm still uncomfortable with that. Mm. I don't find that the best, you know. So I think once you find your way, you can move away from the shyness, I suppose. So.
Yeah, and I think also just finding yourself as who you are, as a person, yeah. as a human, gives you that, you know, content feeling and confidence within you. So even any room I walk in, I feel like, well, regardless of who I'm about to meet,
yeah.
I know who I am and I've done already well, and it gives you that inner confidence. So that's how I feel about it. And actually Strictly was a massive, massive part of that, because up until Strictly we were competitors and I was always very nervous. I wanted to pull out of the competitions. Like, you could ask Neil, he's like, I've had enough of you just being, yeah, I would do first dance. I'm like, I can't do it. Because we're constantly under this judgment, you know, you're never good enough. And I never, ever, ever thought that I was good enough, even when we were winning. So Strictly was a big part of actually like finding myself and what I'm good at and crystallizing that.
You know what's interesting is, you probably don't know this, but I had depression. I talk about this on the podcast.
Yes, I have heard that quite
badly, actually. And one of the ways that anyone who says to me, I've got depression, have you got any advice? I mean, I try and read my way out of it. That's why I've just mm-hmm. read so much stuff about it. One of the things I learned was finding out who you really are, what you're saying there. And once you've got your values system in place, you've got a base to work from, so you can actually appreciate who you are.
Yeah.
Then you can start moving through life, I think. And you've got to go back to basics. And the problem is, when we're thrown into the world, we're told all these weird things like, you've got to be cutthroat, you've got to mm-hmm. be this, you've got, you know, all those sort of things. Everyone's going to stab you in the back. No one likes you. And you take all these things and then you turn yourself into someone who you don't want to be. And when you actually take yourself back to who you really want to be,
yep.
then you can start building again. And I think that there's so much value in what you're saying there, finding out who you actually are.
And what your purpose is. I feel people don't often know what their purpose is.
Yeah.
And it could be, and like you said, everyone screams around us that you got to do big things and, what is your five years plan? What are you heading to? You know, it's always like,
yeah.
But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Your purpose might be so small. It mm-hmm. might be just helping people through a day by smiling at them when you meet them in a shop. You know, I often find myself, those little things are so rewarding, and you then carry on your day with a smile on your face because you've made a difference to someone. So a lot of people just don't find that purpose. Mm. And that's where I think it leads us to bad places.
And interestingly, Strictly, during the pandemic, that's when it came into its own, I thought. It was really weird. The show went on air and there was no audience, was there?
No.
Yet the ratings just went through the roof because you were giving people a bit of release from the horrific
It was the
pandemic.
Only thing that was consistent in life at that moment.
Yeah, it's
they
amazing.
Knew that on Saturday night, yeah. Strictly will be back on. And we felt that responsibility, definitely.
Yeah.
And it meant so much more those couple of years, I feel like, because we just gave people hope that everything will be fine if Strictly is on telly.
Strictly's all right. Yeah,
yeah, Christmas will be there soon.
Yeah.
And like I said, consistency, obviously escapism, that's what it is for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think people forget that everyone must have had that moment where they thought, am I going to die? Because that's what we were being told.
Unknown.
If you catch COVID, you could die. Mm-hmm. And then Sunny Strictly arrives. And it's like, I mean, we've managed to get Sunday Brunch back on air. First through the houses, our houses, and then back into the studio.
But, oh, wow.
But I remember Strictly being on air and thinking, you know, this is helping people massively.
We're going to be okay.
Yeah, and the ratings were huge that year, weren't they? Absolutely
yes.
huge.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's fantastic. Like, I want to go back to your story because I'm enjoying it. Right? So you're a kid in Russia. You started winning competitions in Russia culture and people have noticed you. Or let's use the reality TV term. What's your journey to get to Britain and start working with the coaches?
So my teachers back in Russia, they were brilliant. They still are, and they have created a lot of good dancers actually that are now very successful all around the world. And they always strived for better, and they wanted the best coaches for us. So they would invite British coaches to St. Petersburg. We always had the best people like Karen Hardy, who was also a strictly professional. Richard Porter was eventually mine and Neil coach. And they sort of noticed me, I guess saw something in me, talent, promise. And there was a year when I was supposed to go to Blackpool to compete, but it didn't work out. And I split with my dance partner. But then my mum said, let's just go anyway. You don't know, we might meet someone. You might have some tryouts, what we call them, tryouts with the boys. And I was like, okay, let's go. And Richard, my coach, said, oh, I know a British boy for you. And I think if you guys decide to dance together, people are either going to love you or hate you, because you two are sort of so crazy and creative, both of you, that it might either be, and it will be an explosion, but either in positive or negative way. So I had a tryout with Neil, who at that point was already what we call a rising star champion, right? And he was in the semi-final, trying to break into the final of the main event. And I was literally no one out first round. You know, 190 something placement.
Right.
But he had faith in me. And again, they just saw potential. And he offered me to dance with him, which obviously I grabbed, you know, with my legs and arms. I was like, absolutely, yes. And there I was then dancing with Neil. And
so you relocated to England then?
Sort of half. I was still studying at university in St. Petersburg, so I couldn't fully go. So we'd spend some time in St. Petersburg. I'd do some distant studying. I finished my uni because my parents said, we don't care what you're going to do. We want to support your dance journey, but you've got to finish your university.
Good on
them.
So
I did, yes. St. Petersburg State University of Arts, Culture and Arts. And so completed that whilst traveling all around the world. And like I said, mine and Neil's partnership, I don't know, even if you look at us, right, we're very like different looking, exotic couple.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, half Asian girl with this pale ginger British guy, and we had this fire and creativity, and we were very real and very ourselves, that I think was really refreshing. And we just, our career just went boom, escalated. Within a year, we were in the final, winning British nationals, and we just kept going final, sixth, fourth, second. I think on us in 2 or 3 years, we've won. And then for 2 years, once we won, we stayed there for 2 years, nonstop, winning 26 championships in a row, not losing a single one.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And
it must have been an incredibly exciting time in your life when you were studying in university.
Yeah.
And the actual dream from being a little small girl was coming true. You were going to England and dancing.
Yeah.
And you were, it must have been an amazing time, was it?
It was. And do you know what I remember from that now is, not remember, but analyzing it back, it must have been a massive step for my parents. You know, to let go. I was 18 at that point.
Yeah.
My dad, I remember, came with me, met Neil's parents, met Neil, sort of checked out the situation, the environment, and just left me there. And for them.
Oh, and did you live with him?
I lived in Neil's house. Again, very standard.
Where was that?
In Hampshire. So Neil's family is from the army, his dad is.
Right.
So it wasn't around Borden. It's all the army camps there. And so we lived in Hampshire. Again, really standard practice in ballroom dancing, because we have to spend so much money. It's very expensive. People live like in tiny rooms, sharing flats, sharing hotel rooms, which again, people don't see. You'd have like six couples sharing one room just because nobody has any money. You know, we spent everything on lessons and travel and go to championships. So yeah, I lived with his family. And that's what I think now. It's like, it must have been a massive step for my parents to just let me go. And I feel like even up until now, especially from my dad, I think somewhere at the back of their head, they always think, oh, she'll come back one day. Oh, my little girl will come back one day.
Yeah.
At the back somewhere, they still can't quite let that, you know, thought.
So tell me to back off here if I'm going, getting too nosy.
Curiosity. I love curiosity.
There's a side of me that I can't help. Obviously, you ended up marrying Neil.
Yes.
How long before you entered his house did you end up having a relationship with Neil?
So, so we met, started dancing. And like I said, it's very intense. You literally move into someone's house.
Yeah.
You do everything together. You become, you know, whatever relationship it is.
And do you have perfect English at this stage, like you have now?
No. It was really funny. So I obviously studied English at school and then at university, but I haven't had enough practice to just chat to people. So when I first started dancing with Neil, I could only understand him because he was well-traveled and he knew how to slow down and break it down for me a bit better. And we went to European Championships, I remember, and on the bus, there was another couple and they were from Liverpool, and I was listening to them and I turned to Neil and I went, and what country are they from? Because I couldn't understand, even though it was English,
the
Liverpoolian accent. But then a year later, I was translating them to some other foreigners, you know. I love languages and I feel like I've got a bit of a talent for languages. Like even learning at school, I never studied it. I feel like I felt it.
All right. What do you speak then? Russian, British,
obviously Russian,
obviously
my native English. I studied Spanish at uni and in lockdown a bit, which it's left me now. I need to practice more. In lockdown also, it wasn't enough. So I took on Lithuanian because when I was little, I used to go see my nan in Lithuania and I spoke perfect Lithuanian.
Okay.
But that's like gone. But I just wanted to start it again. I have so many things I want to do in life. This is not enough time. A bit of a talent just from traveling and that. But I feel like if you put me in an environment for a week, I'd just be off.
So go back to Neil. Neil's
Neil's
phoning his mates going, I've won the lottery here, guys. not only am I fulfilling my dream by doing this, you should see who's turned up living in my house. This is absolutely...
No, but I think it was inevitable in terms of we were traveling together, staying together, doing everything together. We had a common goal. So I think like a few months in, he started showing his interest, like hand-picked strawberries. I remember he was bringing hand-picked strawberries and things like that. And we had really good conversations. I just remember staying up all night. You know, when you're younger, you just stay up all night chatting, things like that. And that was it. And then 5 years later, we got married.
Okay, so you're in a relationship. You got married for 5 years. Again, tell me to back off. But I know you're best mates now, aren't you?
That's right, yeah.
So the marriage has ended now, but you're still good friends, which is fantastic, isn't it?
People find it quite bizarre and not everybody understands it. So, yeah, we were in a relationship for 5 years, got married, 7 years marriage. Again, you know, it's not just a day, you know. It was not for nothing. And now, what is it, 13 years we would have been together at that point when we split. And we are literally best friends now. And the way I see it, the reason why is because our relationship at its core was based way beyond just romantic relationship.
Yeah.
It was partnership, as in dancing partnership, business partnership, because you have to do things together, you have to work together, you travel together. It was just literally me and him against the world towards our dreams. You know, there's no family support, we're traveling all around the world. So our base of our relationship was not way beyond romantic, and then it grew into a romantic relationship, right? So if you take away that layer, there's a lot more to our relationship, which now turned into friendship, to keep us best friends.
Do you still support each other?
Absolutely. Like, I know him better than he knows himself. He can't play poker around me. I know his face so well. It's actually a joke.
All right.
So we would ring each other, ask for advice, you know, or share our successes or achievements or something we just need to share with someone. I still put him as my first of kin, you know, in like medical forms and right. that, because his number is the only mobile number I know by heart, you know, and his family literally became my family. His entire family. I still call Helen my mother-in-law, my sisters-in-law, my nieces. We stay in touch constantly. I go to the family birthdays. Like, they are my family.
Right.
Like, there's no other way. And I feel like it's never going to change regardless. You know, if we find our relationship. So, and I think it's a beautiful thing. And why can't it be like that? You know, we grow as people, we find, you know, other journey maybe that takes us different directions, but it doesn't mean I don't respect him or I don't love him in a different way.
Is it tough having to play it out in the media, though, because obviously when you become Strictly, you become a huge... You know, I remember years ago, Strictly was all about the celebrities, and the pros were kind of like, I don't know, just they were sort of in the background a bit, and it was all focused on celebrities. There was a point where it crossed over to the pros now are as big a celebrities as the celebrities on the show. If not bigger, but you know.
I just think it's natural thing because we keep coming back, you know, year after year after year. So people get to know us better, I guess. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Is it hard that everything gets played out in the press for you? Or are you okay with it?
So 2016 was my first year. I came straight from competitive world just from being, this girl who competed, done all these things to suddenly be thrown into this world of TV. And there's nobody prepares you for it. You have to learn the hard way. And obviously I've learned the hard way, you know, just from simply just doing interviews and talking to people and then suddenly being, you know, in front of the press, you know, and things like that. But I've grown so much and evolved so much from it that honestly now, It really doesn't matter. I always say it doesn't define me, you know. It whatever is written or what people think, it really doesn't define me. So it doesn't matter because the real me, what I do now, me and you having conversation, that's the moment in time that's important, not whatever else has been said about me or you. So that's the way I've learned to maybe deal with it, but actually it has become my life now. I'm so disconnected from it. I just know what is real. I know if my Neil friendship is real, that's all that matters because I know I'll be there for him if either of us in trouble, you know, things like that. That's what matters.
It's funny though, because they put those people on, say, somewhere like Love Island, and we both have a understanding of this, and they take them, pluck them from obscurity, and they make them famous for a year or something, however long it is. And then when you go, oh, guys, this is quite tough on them, really. This is going to be hard work. Everyone goes, they know what they're getting themselves in for.
They don't.
You just have no idea what it's like when people are hammering you and the story's wrong and people are judging you. And it's kind of, I mean, I've been on TV for years now, so I'm, but I still every now and then will
get
hit.
I feel like you must have seen also media change, right? Over quite a long period of time.
Yeah, because it used to be all the journalists who used to troll me. Now it's the general public. I mean, journalists are funny because they used to, I mean, they've got to fill up column inches. So they spent, plenty of them have slagged me off in their time for money, which is not the best career.
I have
in the
heard
world.
Those stories,
but
yeah.
But I also think when you're on TV, the thing is, the more you're getting slagged off, the more people are trolling you, the more successful you are. That's what I always...
You take it as a compliment.
So you've
almost
got to take it as a compliment. You know, when I moved from Sky Sports to terrestrial channels, BBC and now Channel 4, the amount of hatred went up massively. And it's only because I'd moved onto a bigger platform, even though Sky Sports was fantastic, a lovely platform, but I'd moved on to where I was more, you know, more people could see me because I'm on a terrestrial channel, not a satellite channel. And it just, to begin with, I was really shocked. I was like, oh my God, everyone hates me. They, you know, and that thing happens where you just lose all your confidence.
Yeah.
Everybody hates me because... And then you realize, no, people like
it's
you.
It's just because I'm doing better.
Yeah, people don't tell you they like you all the time. It's the people who want to tell you they hate you. Yeah,
so, but nobody gets your age. I feel sorry for these guys, like you said, that being thrown into this world. It almost has to be some sort of academy that prepares them for it, isn't it?
We get back to the bit we were talking about a minute ago, which is what do you stand for? Who are you? Yeah. At least I can go, I'm a TV presenter, and you can say, I dance, you know, and that's what I'm very good at dancing. These guys, they're good at being in swim costumes. Do you know what I mean? And they haven't got their talent to base it on. And then I think it's really hard. You know, if you're going to be famous, make sure you're famous for something that you're proud of, not just snogging someone on telly, you know. And I think that's where the fundamental problem comes with them, you know.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, some people's talent is their personality, to be honest with you. You know, some people don't have that, and some people are really good at selling their personalities. So it depends how you look at it. But
yeah, but I'm not sure that's a job. That's the bloke down the local pub, isn't it?
But I feel also, and for me, what's become a really big part of my life is understanding, right?
Yeah.
Understanding why journalists do so.
They've got to earn a few quid to pay for their kids.
They're under pressure too.
They are, yeah.
They have to,
100%.
They have to get how many articles a day? It's ridiculous. Yeah. So you kind of, once you understand reasoning for people's doings, it puts you at peace.
Yeah.
That's all I do. Listening, understanding, learning more than actually talking and judging, right?
Someone wrote a whole page on me once in a broadsheet about how bad I was. and I actually, after I analysed it, I was angry to begin with and I was very upset. And then after I analysed it, I said, hey, I'm worthy of a whole page. That's pretty
right?
good.
Right, yeah.
I was in a list of the 50th worst football fans ever. and it was funny because in that list is people like Hitler and Mussolini.
Wow. And so you've been put into that bracket.
It was just like Elton John and Noel Gallagher and stuff. I'm like, God, Jesus Christ, I'm in a pretty good list here. You know, all these people who are in there. It's quite incredible, yeah.
But I feel like you're with me on that. It's understanding, isn't it? Gives you peace.
Yes.
Rather than fighting against it.
Yeah.
Once you know why people act a certain way or why they have to do those certain things, you're like, oh, okay, I'm actually cool with it. And sometimes you go, do you know what? Respect to you.
Yeah, and also understanding that when the people are buying into it, like the viewers or the listeners or something like that, and they want to jump on, right, a pile on, it's because they're looking at you and thinking, my life's not as good as their life. Mm. They don't know what's going on in your life, but that's what they're looking. So they're not actually looking at you, they're looking at the person on telly, and it's a bit different.
Maybe you can tell the listeners, what does my jacket say that I walked in today?
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful jacket. What's it? You know my...
You know my name, but you don't know my story.
Yeah.
And
it's a good jacket, that.
It's self-made as well.
Did you?
If you want one, I can make you one.
Did you really?
Too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love upcycling, so I don't know.
I'm very impressed by this. With big white paint down the back of it. That's very good.
And I think that's true. And even... Okay, we're talking about us being in the public eye, but it applies to every single person you meet on the street who make those prejudgment, preconceptions.
Yeah.
But we don't know what goes on in their lives at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
Definitely.
And that's why I mean learning and listening and understanding and not judging.
Yeah.
It's so important. And what I find is it's not even for them, it's for me.
Yeah.
It's better. For my head is better.
If all else fails, try empathy. So if something's winding you up, I always think this, if something's winding you up, try and, you just said actually so well, look at it from their perspective and then it'll feel nicer.
Inside your own.
Yeah, the reality.
Mind.
How did you get onto Strictly? How do they go about finding, because clearly that's something everyone wants to do in the dance world. How do they go about trying to find you guys for that?
The thing about Strictly, I think that everybody knows is, they are the best at everything, right? The best costume designers, the best set designers, the best group numbers, and they always look for the best dancers. So they went out to the proper championships to look who's at the top. And at that point, it was me and Neil, and obviously because we were British, so they asked if we would be interested. And at that point, because I'm 7 years younger than Neil, right? At that point, Neil was kind of losing his passion for competitive dancing because it's quite traumatizing, you know? And you never have any money, and you're never good enough, and it kind of drains you a little bit. So after doing it for 30 years, he said to me, I feel like I'm falling out of love with the dancing because of that competitive nature. I feel like, and we were always known for being very creative and putting like creative shows together, like that really put us aside from other competitors. And he's like, I want to explore that avenue a bit more, maybe creating more show stuff rather than,
yeah,
you know, being judged. And which kind of made me a bit anxious because I was like, oh, well, what am I going to do? You know, losing purpose, basically. That's what it was. I was like, well, if we're not going to be traveling and competing, what would be my purpose? I was a bit nervous about it. And when we did our last Blackpool, what Neil said would be our last Blackpool, we got a phone call then from Strictly offering us a space. And I was like, wow, that really came at the right time. Like, not planned at all, but came at the right time, giving both of us new purpose. And little I knew that for me personally, it's like everything that I'm passionate about and everything that makes me happy in one package. It's mad because I love teaching because I think it makes difference. Yeah, I love just generally helping people like make difference in their life. So seeing them going from nothing to suddenly, you know, becoming dancers. I love teaching, love finding ways of approaching their mind. So that part of Strictly is my favorite, probably. Obviously, I love performing without being judged. How good is that, right? You just dance.
Hold on, you are being judged. The judges are there.
No, but I mean, but when we do group numbers,
all right,
yeah, the public, okay, just, yeah, they just,
just enjoy,
admire
it, yeah,
you. Mm-hmm. And realizing that, I remember the first launch show, I was like, oh my God, I'm making people happy,
yeah,
just by doing what I love. The smiles and the appreciation, I was like, wow, this is fantastic. That's why I dance, actually. So it's given me that realization. Wearing all the costumes, obviously, because I love making my costumes. I used to even make my own costumes, being involved with wardrobe. Everybody knows if you can't find Katy, she's in the wardrobe room. Meeting new people every year, like when on earth, where else on earth would you have a politician, a YouTube social media star, an athlete all in one room? You know what I mean? Yeah. And even them meeting together, I don't think there's many chances in their life to actually come across each other, but Strictly gives them that chance. So meeting incredible people, like my list of celebrities I dance with, honestly, I don't know. It's phenomenal. Like some legendary people, you know. And so it's everything I love in one package. So I know it sounds so cheesy, our dream job, but it truly is true. No, for now.
It doesn't at all. Just before we carry on with this, I just want to ask you one question. It just occurred to me. When you were dancing with Neil and traveling all around the world doing it, as well as dancing, do you have to do fitness as well? Do you have to spend time in gyms or running or cardio or strength?
Yeah.
What do you, I mean, obviously flexibility you probably need.
Yeah, but yes. What but about? Do you know what's really funny? Because ballroom dancing is, it's not gymnastics. The strengths of ballroom dancers, right, are in different places. So a lot of actually, mainly boys, they are so unflexible. It's a joke. They can't even touch their toes.
Really?
Like, they can't even touch their knees sometimes. It's really funny. But yeah, it's like any sport. When your body gets used to one type of movement, it's not enough. You know, so you have to do extra gym for strength or extra cardio. Like my exercise sort of scales completely changed now. Like I love yoga now because I'm getting older. I'm getting older and I wake up thinking, oh my God, I can't even, you know, get out of bed. Love yoga now, do extra sort of weights and things like that to support my body, and it's really important. But when we were younger, it actually wasn't the priority, if I'm honest with you.
We
just get up and dance, smash it out. Oh, it was enough. But we did do extra training. It's actually to protect you. It's not to do more. It's to protect your body from injuries.
But you naturally, like, you're so, I feel so slouchy sitting here looking at you because you hold your body so well. Is that natural?
No, it's a habit. Like anything, okay, it's a habit.
You learn to do it.
Do you know what one of my biggest pet hates is? Bad posture.
Oh God, that's,
because I think it's so easy to fix. It's just a tiny bit of awareness in your body just to go, shoulders back, that's it. And every time I see someone, I'm like poking them in the back. And I think it's so easy just throughout the day, just little, oh, pick up, chest up, or as I like to say, tits up. Tits up. And it gives you a different sense of confidence.
Yeah,
it's honestly.
Definitely true, yeah. Yeah, and also someone told me, a physio once, that you, if you get your if you're too far forward, you're putting a lot of stress on your
lower back.
If you get back, you're in neutral position, and that's why for some reason we all sort of lean forward or something. So,
well, because look at us now, we're leaning towards microphone or laptop or social media.
Yeah, let's blame the microphone for my bad posture. okay, so strictly, what's the most important thing when you take? Let's go through some of your people, by the way, Ed Bors. I mean, obviously, he's not the greatest dancer in the world, but he was
the people's champion, as Len said.
He was entertaining. Yeah. Adam Peaty's an athlete. So, and so is Nicola Adams. So, but yes. She had to leave, didn't she? Because she got
COVID. I got COVID.
You got COVID.
Absolutely.
Oh, poor Nicola.
Heartbroken. Yeah. I was obviously more heartbroken for her that it was such a groundbreaking partnership for us, first time ever.
It was the first same-sex.
Correct. On Strictly.
And Nicola, for anyone who doesn't know, is champion boxer, Olympic boxer. Yeah, she's fantastic. I've interviewed her a few times. She's lovely, isn't she?
She is.
She's so nice.
Such a character.
So Adam Peaty, he's an Olympian, so he must have been quite good at getting the routine going and sort of hammering out sort of training sessions and stuff.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting, but I think athletes sometimes find it almost harder.
Right.
Because they know their way of training, and obviously they're not scared of hours or the physicality of it, but they have their ways and they're trained, the body's trained in a certain way. So like Nicola had the boxer's posture, for example,
right?
So to get out of the habit.
So she's sort of closed in a bit
so
because
slouched.
She doesn't want to hit.
The range of her shoulder movement was ridiculously small. So to get her even just simply to open up the chest was like 3 days worth of stretching, you know.
Right.
Or Adam just, because he's training certain muscle groups, but not the others.
Yeah.
He found certain dancers extremely hard. His feet in quick step and jive were on fire. He could not walk because he never has to bash his feet on the floor like that ever. He's in water.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite funny. So, but their mentality is incredible. However, I'm been so blessed that every single partner that I've had has given me a full commitment and dedication, and that's all I'm asking
and
for.
And the best dance you've done is obviously Gangnam Style with Ed Bors. That's
well, it's the most known. It's not particularly maybe the best.
No, it's the best. I loved it.
Is it? Do you love it?
I loved it. I thought it was so funny watching that. That it was. I just really enjoyed it. Like, I mean, that's the idea of dance. At the end of the day, is to entertain and get people to enjoy. And when I watched him do that, I was laughing so much. And good on him for doing it.
I always say dancing is about what feeling you leave people with.
Yeah,
they're not going to remember the moves, they're going to remember how they felt.
Okay, so is it different? You've got Joe McFadden, who you won with. You're thinking, right, we can do all sorts here because you're great. We can really, you know, turn it on in a tango, and we can do some have a smile on our face with a Charleston. With someone like Ed Bors, are you going, right, we need to entertain in humor in every dance because that is the way people are going to perceive you?
I think that's the key. The key why Ed was so successful is because, number one, I never compromised on dancing, ever. I made sure we're learning the technique.
Oh, you look like you're telling me off.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I actually have this alter ego,
you did,
the teacher.
Yeah. You look like a teacher there, ever. The eyes looked at me.
And I pointed my hand. Yeah, my body language turns into something else, doesn't it? But yeah, this was the key. I feel like he took it extremely seriously. He wanted to learn to dance, you know, and through that, there's a difference between funny and fun.
Okay, yeah.
Right? He never wanted to be funny consciously. Mm-hmm. He was just fun to watch because he committed to every single dance so much that it was admirable and adorable and joyful to watch. He's like, look, I'm not great, but I'm going to give it absolutely everything. I've put all the hours in. So you can't sort of criticize him for not taking it seriously and just being rubbish. He has given it absolutely everything. So here I am, and this is as good as going to get. And I think that's why it was so successful. So no, I never just look at you and go, ah, you're just going to be a joke. I'm giving up on you. Never. I think this is one of the, again, you know, speaking of owning your strengths, I think this is one of my strengths that I see potential always. This is first thing I see, potential. And I've got this thing called aggressive positivity. Where I'm like, you can do it and you will do it. Just trust me. I'm here to help you. We will do it. Every single person is able. And another pet hate of mine is when people say, oh, I can't dance, or I can't do any, or I can't, I wasn't born this, or I wasn't born to do that. So like you might know, I'm also a national numeracy charity ambassador. And the reason why I became one is because you just keep hearing, ah, oh, I can't do maths. Ah, oh, I'm not a mathematician. Ah, oh, I wasn't born that way. And it's rubbish. It's exactly the same what I see in the dance room. You just take it step by step, you break it down, and you learn. And you might not become a professor or the best dancer in the world, but you can improve. And to your standards, you can be the best version. And I think Strictly proves it year after year after year. And that's what this experience is about. So, yeah.
So there's a balance, though, isn't there, between trying to get the best dance and then...
entertain.
And the choreography. The choreography must be... There must be times where you go, right, this needs to change because you just can't get the step and we're going to
we're going to
muck up here.
There is a moment like
right. Now, I went to watch Simon Rimmer do this, and the weird thing about going to Strictly when it's live is what people can't see on the TV, it's like a sporting event. And what happens is you're sitting on the side, the nerves from the celebrity
electric, you could feel it.
But they, it's so, it makes you nervous because mm-hmm. you're seeing these people come out and they're, I mean, I'm exaggerating here, but basically their lips are wobbling, their knees are shaking.
Some do,
They are so terrified about what they're about to do. And I've spoken to so many of those Strictly celebrities. And they all say the same thing. There's this moment on the first show or some of the shows where you think, if someone gives me a chance, Simon always says, if someone gives me a chance to leave now, I'll take it because I'm so scared. For some reason, it's terrifying. I suppose they don't want to let down their partner mm-hmm. and they don't want to let down their friends and family and the viewers at home. And they don't want to be laughed at. It's an amazing thing to see that nerve. They'll see the nerves as they come onto the dance floor. Is that something that you have to help them with? Is that one of the jobs is to try and make sure? Because you're not nervous, I assume.
I think also what people don't realize, the professionals, we're not just... we. Wear so many hats doing this job. We are
shrinks.
Yeah. We're their mentors, we're their mental health support, we're their shoulder to lean on, we're right. their teachers, we're choreographers, we have to dance ourselves. Literally everything, you know. And again, for me, I love it, right? Because I want to give the best experience to these people. And yes, nerves is something you have to deal with. And you kind of learn on the week one what their reaction to this environment. And then you can help them better. But I think the best way to help them is to train. It's a repetition, because then if they've got the dance so well in their muscle memory, they can relax. But it gives you freedom.
Yeah, but they don't have a lot of time. It's a week, isn't it?
It's 3.5 days.
It's not a lot, is it?
It's not a lot. But that's where our job is, right? And to put them at ease and put them in the right environment. And just to understand that it's not a life or death situation, you know. The more, if you've put, actually, like athletes, like Adam was brilliant at it. He was like, why am I nervous? I've put in so many hours for this dance. Yeah. It's time to celebrate now. And that is the correct mentality. You've done the hard work. It is what it is now, if you have put all the hours, you know. But yeah, we have to be there for them. And all I always tell them, forget everyone else around. It's just me and you in our rehearsal room. I'm there to guide you. I'm your support throughout. If you need, I'll talk you through it. Just focus on me. And then everything else sort of blurs out on the background and they become calm, because you just think, oh, it's another run in the rehearsal room. You know, I'll count you in. I'll tell you exactly what to do if you just focus on me. And that, it does work so far for me, I feel like, because that's what's scary. It's everyone's watching and the judges and the hype of it. But if you sort of bubble out that and just stay, just me and you, partnership, just like we practiced, it's like another run of the dance.
It's such a shame this is only audio sometimes, I think, because your face has absolutely come alive saying that. It's clearly something you adore because you're absolutely sparkling saying that. Is Strictly the biggest one of these competitions? Because obviously all the European countries have them, I believe, and there's Dancing with the Stars as well.
In Ireland is the closest. Yeah, so Strictly Come Dancing, the name is only in England. And then you've got Dancing with the Stars all around the country.
Right,
some
all
of them
the world,
are really popular, some aren't. So the closest one to us is the Irish one, for example. We actually have a few professionals like Kai have done before who came over now and joined the Strictly cast.
So, but this is Strictly bigger than Dancing with the Stars in America?
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best. No, honestly, do you know why? I think we managed to keep it as authentic as possible.
Yeah.
You know, it is what our grandmas used to dance, the foxtrots, the tango.
See, that's why I think Craig Revel Horwood is so important for the show, because whilst everybody else will go 10, 10, 10, he'll go 8 because you missed a step.
Yeah.
And to me, that makes it more important because it's how you're being judged. And I want it to be judged like, obviously it was entertaining, but you missed a step. And he'll say that. He'll say it was good, but you missed a step or missed something or blah, 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 something. So you only get an 8. And I think you need that sort of
100%
and integrity.
I think that's the type of judge I would be, honestly, which is, you know, might be one day you might see me in this position. And this is how I'd like to be, as encouraging as you want to be. You want to give a correct feedback, because as a professional, for example, we get off from Shirley saying that heel turn was perfect, because I know we spent hours and hours teaching them how to get those bloody heels together. Yeah. And if someone like Shirley or Craig notices it, oh my God, it's like honey on my heart, you know, as a which the general public wouldn't see. But like I said, if I was to be in their position, I think that's how I would be. I would give definitely a praise to the things that they've worked on, because then it makes it worth it.
Are you famous back in Russia, back in your hometown?
No.
No, they don't
know. Not at all. Oh. Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. But do you know what? Even before Strictly, anybody knew that me and Neil Knight are British champions? 3 times world champions representing Great Britain? No. And do you know what I'm saying? Nobody knew that, even in our local town.
Remind me to tell you a story, not on air, about one of your pros who I upset with a comment on that once.
Oh,
got really upset. So I was like, is it big? And their perception of ballroom dancing was it was the biggest thing in the. And I only knew Strictly, and I think that's the majority of the countries. It's quite a small, tight community, isn't it?
It's
a worldwide community, but quite small.
But what I'm saying is, I'm so grateful that it's given, for example, my achievements a platform to like shine, you know, to show it.
We're coming to the end of an hour. I've got 3 questions I'll ask you, but just before that, what does it feel like when you're, you know, if you go onto YouTube and look at Neil and Katya dancing, that when they're in their flow and they're just moving around, what does it actually feel like when you've got to that form of expertise? What does that feel like for you?
I always say on a dance floor, I can be unapologetically me. So you let go of all the inhibitions, all opinions, when you truly are dancing, yeah? I just, literally, this is me. This is my language, you know? If I want to be loud and big, I can be that. You know, I speak and I reach out to people. That's what it feels like. You are, okay, I must say there's completely 2 different sides to the competitive world where I never felt good enough, never, because you're always judged. And now performing on Strictly has given me a completely new outlook on dancing, and I finally love it, like with all my heart.
Beautiful.
And because it's like talking to people. That's how I feel. I want to leave them with something. Mm. I want to make you smile or maybe cry in another dance. I want to tell that story. That's how it feels like. It's a full expression. It feels like fire, literally like fire in my belly. That's how much I love it.
Okay.
And you know, in the gym or like tennis players, when they're so physical that they make noises and, you know, in the gym you're pushing, it's the same. And that's why we make noises sometimes or smile, like my face, I can't help, but my muscles just, they scream. It's like screaming through movement.
Beautiful. Right. I've got three questions. I used to ask all my guests this and I haven't done it for a while, so I'm going back to it.
Oh.
What one piece? Well, it's because we're back in the kitchen. I've done it on video for such a long time
now.
It's
not a Sunday kitchen. What is it today? It's Friday kitchen.
Friday kitchen. What one piece of advice would you like to give my listeners that has been invaluable to your life? Have you got one?
I think nobody and nothing in this world defines you apart from yourself. But you've got to find your purpose.
Okay. Good advice. Have you ever seen a ghost or a UFO?
Oh, no.
Do you
keep looking for a person?
I would just, I would, yeah. Well, some people have on this podcast. I've had a few people who have, but I just love to, I'd love reading about UFOs.
I've heard that. No, I haven't.
And I just would like to, you know, I'd love to see one. Be great, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be amazing if it?
Is it because it makes you feel like we're not the only ones?
Yeah.
In this universe?
Do you know what conspiracy theories? I think they work because people want more.
Yes.
And so they go, yeah, there's a conspiracy here. The whole world's against us. I want a bit more,
proof.
And I think we can't help ourselves from wanting a bit more. And I go down the UFO. I think I might do a UFO podcast actually with a couple of mates because I go down
that rabbit hole.
Constantly, mm-hmm. Right? And then I have to drag myself back and go, nah, some of this doesn't add up, you know. But I love it. And I find myself just going down because I want
something else.
Yeah. I've been reading about alien time, the fact that the aliens are actually time travelers. Mm-hmm. They're actually us in the future time traveling. And I love it. And I'm really all about that. Then I talk about, then I hear about multiverses. Then I hear about they're just here, but they're trying to. Oh, I don't know. I could go on for hours.
I love
about
that, but I do believe in like the energies of the universe. I definitely do.
There's definitely more, isn't there?
100%. It's all an energy, and it comes from somewhere. There's definitely more. It's just certain things in my life that happened. I'm like,
this is quite morbid, and I'm sorry if it is, but I've watched my brother die and my dad die, and a few seconds after my brother's case, I actually watched him die. My dad was the day later. Mm-hmm. I saw him, but as soon as they're dead, there's no in my mind, there's no person left there. When my brother died, he wasn't the body was there, mm-hmm. but he wasn't there. It just felt like the energy had just left his body, and 2 minutes later, you're looking, going, well, that's not my brother.
That's just a host for the person.
Yeah, it's quite deep, this, but I do think that it's like the consciousness and the electricity and the energy and all that sort of stuff, it was all there and it's all gone. So, you know, anyway, final question. What is the meaning of life? Just the easy one at the end.
Oh wow, just as you spoke about death as well. Oh god, no, that's not the answer. What is the meaning of life? I think present.
Be present.
Yes, now, here, now.
Well, that's very stoic and very zen as well. I like both of those. That they, you know, I read a lot of those things, and they're always saying, "Be present."
It's the answer.
Yeah.
It works for everything, honestly. Wow, we both just sort of looked into the unknown.
Yeah, that's actually a very good answer. Be present. Yeah. There you go. You're like a
guru.
A Buddhist monk or a famous stoic. You know. There you go. Thank you so much for joining me, and best of luck this year with Strictly. I hope it goes well.
Thank you. Thanks, Tim.